The trauma is not in the event. It's in my relationship to the memory of it. That's why mindfulness and meditation are so important, because I have to learn how to get connected to that essence. It's so difficult for a lot of the kids I work with because they put on their diagnosis of ADHD, I'm OCD. You may have those characteristics, but that's not who you are. Does that make sense to you?
Mm-hmm.
So it's really important to see that my essence, who I truly am, is okay all the time. I just have to learn how to connect to it.
All right. Brad Langenberg.
Good morning.
Bradley, you and I, we've known each other for many decades.
At least 25. Had to be like late 90s.
Yeah, probably late 90s.
Late 90s, early 2000s, somewhere in there. Yeah.
And you were very into horses, but you were, as you said, you were just the first person to put my daughters on horses when they were little kids. That was sweet. Tell me what you do. You work with recovery people, don't you?
Yeah, Mark, there's a few different things that I do. I had been involved quite a bit with equine therapy. That was really kind of my specialty, and I was doing that at Will Rogers State Park in the Palisades and just starting that up there until it burned down. But I'm an interventionist, and I've also worked as a drug and alcohol counselor. Originally started back in 1988, actually right about now, 1988, I started working. There was a mental hospital on the corner of Barrington Olympic called CPC Westwood. It was a CP Community Psychiatric Centers. And that was the first place I worked, working in the field of recovery.
How did you get into the whole recovery world?
Well, a personal experience.
Always,
I got a lot of it.
It's always that,
know?
Right?
Yeah, from Nebraska.
Tell me a little bit of your story. You're from Nebraska.
Yeah, originally from Nebraska. I'm actually from a little town called Hoskins, Nebraska. And when I think I left, it might have been under 200 or right at 200. It's grown quite a bit. It's 247 now. So I come from there, and I actually came to California to get sober. I didn't know what I was getting into. People told me about this program, this 12-step program. I really didn't know what it was, but to shorten the story a little bit, was that last night in Nebraska, I had this experience, and I had been trying to quit for years. I can't tell you how many nights I went to bed going, I'm never going to do this again, and you know, maybe I would make it through the day because I had to work, but as soon as 3 o'clock came, I was back at it again.
What was your drug?
A little bit of everything, Mark. Alcohol was the first thing. Back in Nebraska, I had a company for a while that was called Advanced Fitness, so I was selling exercise equipment, cocaine, and steroids. So we had a lot going on there. So a lot of that. By the time I gotten clean, there was alcohol, cocaine, several different types of steroids. We were shooting adrenaline. There was something we were taking back at that time. I can't remember.
Adrenaline?
Yeah, that's a rush. You got to be kind of careful. Intramuscularly, you got to be kind of careful how you do that. So we were doing that, and painkillers. My dad had gotten hurt in an accident. My dad's a cattle feeder, rancher, farmer. And so that last night, I kind of had an experience, and I've been looking to get clean and sober for quite some time. I really wanted that. I didn't know what it meant, but I wanted it to stop. And that last night in Nebraska, I'd been here to California one time. A friend of mine was a bodybuilder at Gold's Gym and big guy. I came out here one time in a blackout and got here, and I had a really bad, you know, that shitty wine on an airplane.
Yeah.
I drank most of it. So I woke up the next day with a really shitty wine hangover and bad cocaine hangover. And I was here for 2 days, and I thought, there's so many people. It's crowded and it's bright. You know, any good alcoholic or drug addict likes, we want cloud cover. You know, we don't want to be seen. So I really didn't want to come here. And that last night I was laying there, I'd been at it all day, you know, from like early in the morning, because I was helping my dad a little bit back then. And back home, if it rains or snows, that means you get the rest of the day off. You don't have to do anything. So it's time. The party's on. And I'd been at it all day. It was 2 o'clock in the morning. I was laying in bed, Mark, and I had this experience, and I got to a place where I said, God, help me. I'll do whatever you want to do. And I had this moment where I saw myself. It was a bright light moment, but it's not that I saw God. I saw myself as I truly was. A, that I was an alcoholic and a drug addict. the B, the most powerful one, was that I knew I was full of shit and I've been faking it all my life. That I had this, all this false bravado, and underneath it, you remember Mayberry?
The
Mayberry RFD.
Oh, sure, sure.
I was Andy Griffith on the outside and Barney Fife on the inside.
Oh, wow.
You know, that's the only way to put it. So, but what really happened that night was kind of a great thing for recovery is I realized I had no answers for myself from myself, that I could do nothing for me, and I had no, from me, I had no answers for how to get better. And that night, I just, whatever I need to do, and I talked to my friend that was a bodybuilder at Gold's Gym, and I met his girlfriend at that time, and I thought she was a real addict, and I told him, you better stay away from her. He said, she's been sober for 60 days, why don't you call her? So I made the call, and that was on March 6th, 1987, and March 11th, I'm here in Marina Del Rey, California. Came from a big fish, small pound to this, small pond to this. And it's been the most amazing experience I've ever had in my whole life, you know. I think the thing, and I've listened to a few of your YouTubes, and there's got some great, great people you're talking to. And alcohol and drugs was really not, it really was never a problem. It was the answer to all my problems. So what happened for me and what I realized is drugs and alcohol, do you want me to keep going? You're not asking any questions.
No, you're doing great. You're doing great. No, I've heard other people say the same thing, that the drugs or alcohol are the solution to the problem.
No.
They're not the actual problem.
Yeah. So that's what I meant is drugs and alcohol didn't make me say and do those things I was doing out there. What it did is it took away all my inhibitions, so it came out. And the tough part about recovery and anything else is I put the lid on it. So it took us one person, one event to come up and scratch the surface, and out would come. And I was just keeping it together. I had spent most of my life trying to keep up this pretense of I'm okay or I'm strong. I've tried to add everything I could to me to feel okay inside. And a big part of recovery is really letting go of those things. And for me, coming out here in 12 steps was really kind of an answer to a prayer that I had when I was a little boy, because I've never understood how to live out there. And there's a lot, trauma has gotten to be a really, a lot of people talk about that in recovery or treatment right now, and it's very important. A lot of that's happened because of insurances, but what I realized for myself, and I spoke at a university on the East Coast a couple years ago, and we were talking about the fentanyl crisis, and I don't think we have a fentanyl crisis. We have a society crisis. And what I mean is, the one thing I, in my opinion, is working with people, and I've worked with eating disorders. I'm also an eating disorder. I've worked with everything. I've worked with people on the Forbes list to, I used to counsel the homeless kids down here in Venice. And I'll tell you a story about that a little bit later. But the one thing that I noticed that we all have in common is we're all fear-based. That's the starting point. And that makes it very difficult to really enjoy life out there. And for me, I was taught how to be a success, but I never was taught how to enjoy life. And I think for me, everything, what I realized after a few years of recovery, everything I've ever done in life, at the end of that, I thought I was going to get some freedom and some peace of mind. That's what I did. I thought the drugs and alcohol. I thought being a cowboy and the belt buckle. I thought being wrestling was a big thing, and I thought if I became a state champion wrestler, then I thought I would feel okay. And what I'll never forget is right after I won it, something happened. I felt all the air come out of my balloon, and that's when I realized that there's a phrase in recovery. We talk about codependency. Now they use dependency disorder, I think, something like that. I forgot. But for me, a definition of codependency is allowing the behavior of someone else to dictate how I feel. So if an event or a person acts a certain way or something happens, it has the ability to dial me up or dial me down. It has the ability to inflate me or deflate me. That's not freedom. So for me in recovery, I had to find a way to be free. And I found a lot of that in 12 steps. The interesting thing about all that, Mark, is I came from this little tiny town. I still have the place. It's in my family. It's been in my family since 1878.
Wow.
Yeah, now I have it. Now I'm the caretaker of it. But I was in such a hurry to get out of that small place because I thought I should be in the city. And was fascinating. I was in New York, and I was down on Wall Street. I was working with somebody, and there were some men pulled up in a limo, and they were dressed beautifully, and they were talking about they were going to buy a place in the country, and they were going to retire, and that was the epitome of the goal of life, was to go buy a place in the country where I just came from. I had it the whole entire time. So it's kind of been what I found in my recovery and on this journey, that simplicity that I have in Nebraska that's back there. That's what I've been looking for in recovery, is some simplicity.
Mm. I think a lot of our lives get really chaotic and cluttered up.
All the people that I worked with, and I've worked with some, you know, from wealthy to homeless to some of the gang guys down in East L.A., we spend the most part of our lives trying to complicate it, and then we spend the last part trying to simplify it as best as we possibly can. You know?
What is the common thread you see amongst all these different people that are dealing with
fear,
drugs?
Fear, trying to figure out how to fit in out there. You know, I mean, there is nothing wrong with work and making money and everything. If you have too much, let me know. But there has to be a higher goal than that, you know. I would say fear is the biggest thing. And for me, trauma is just, because trauma is just driving down the 405. Trauma, there is so much competition out there. That was the big thing for me, is just to get out of the competition. I don't know if it's like that in your world, but it's so competitive. It's so nice now. I go to Gold's Gym Venice, and now I'm the old guy. And what I noticed is I get along so much with these young guys because, you know what? I'm no competition anymore. I'm no threat to them at all. All that's gone. And so I think that's the biggest thing. And I think I don't know if you know this, but the word personality comes from the Latin word persona. I think it's Latin. That word means mask. And in my recovery is a lot about taking off the mask and what's going on behind there, you know.
Yeah, to really be totally honest with yourself is a rare thing.
Yeah. And also the big thing is that in recovery, I heard that the alcoholic and the addict is in full flight from reality, and I know that to be true. I was always into the future someplace, or I was in the past. I was never really present for my life. The only times I really was a few times when I was a young boy, sometimes in athletics, sometimes on horseback. I think that's when I do the equine therapy, I think the biggest thing that I noticed is, you know, people always say they enjoy nature, right? You enjoy nature?
Of course.
Yeah, I do too. You know, when I realize, you know why? It's natural. Much of what I do is not natural. And there's no people out there either.
That's
so
right.
I don't have to deal with anybody, which has really been a very difficult thing. I read something one time, Mark, and it said, relaxation is your natural state. And I thought, well, that kind of makes sense, right? And then I went about my day and I realized I'm not that relaxed. And it really hit me that that means I'm living unnaturally. And I went to a masseuse after that and I was telling her about tension. And she goes, Brad, over 90% of the pain when I'm working on people is not muscle soreness. That's tension. So a lot of this thing is for me to really learn how to relax and be in the moment and being comfortable. Really, I suppose the best way to put it is I work a lot with ADHD and a lot of that, almost everything with trauma. I've worked with trauma with the horses. And the great thing with that is I'm able to show them a way that they can get grounded, connected with that horse, where they're totally in the moment with that horse. And you can see their muscles relax.
Mm.
Because there's several different things that come there. There's something very inviting about that horse. Also, most people, everybody say it has unconditional love, which I get. But I always ask them, what does that mean to you? And what I've noticed is for me, that horse is always willing to give me a chance to start over. No matter what I've done, and I've done some shitty things with horses, trying to train horses when I was younger. I did some things I'm not really proud of. But I noticed that horse was always willing me to start over. But the big thing I noticed, especially with people, I was going to say probably my biggest addiction as a young man growing up was approval, seeking the approval of other people. That was the big thing. And when I'm with a horse or a dog, I don't have any self-reference going on. I don't care what my breast sounds like. I don't care if my teeth is okay. Like today, I kind of cut myself shaving and I went, oh, okay, now I'm going to be on here with this. That would be something when a long time ago, I'd have to get that all covered up. But I don't have any self-reference with the horse. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
The horse is not judging you.
The horse is not. He doesn't. And, but the big thing is I don't have any thought what that horse is thinking. It's not what you think about me that hurts. It's my thinking about what you think about me that hurts really, really bad. So a lot of the recovery is when I work with is, A, is we have to uncover the trauma to see what it is, to talk about it. For mine, when I was a young kid growing up, I'm an only child, but my, it's been a few days. I had a sister, and she was born before me, and so you can see it's still fresh. So she was born before me, and then she had a genetic brain disease, and she started to have seizures, and at the end of her last couple years of her life, she didn't talk. We had to use a machine to suck the saliva out of her lungs. We had to change her diapers and feed her by hand. When she passed away, all I know is there was a lot of chaos around my household. Then they had me, well, I was born at that time, and then they waited a few years and I was okay. I didn't have any of the symptoms and that type of thing. And the doctor said, go ahead and have another child because the chances of this happening again are 1,000,000 to 1. And so they had my brother, and my brother he was great. His name was Brian, and he was really good. One minute.
Take your time.
It's more, I guess, I appreciate letting me be this vulnerable here. It does come up quite frequently. I get a chance to talk in public, but this is pretty strong today. Then I was playing with him in the sandbox when he was 3. And he had his first seizure and he would turn blue and I had to run and get my mom. So he slowly declined to the same thing with my sister, exactly the same. And then he finally died when he was 7. And, there was a couple of different things that happened for me during that time, Mark. One is, I never really realized this, but until just a few years ago, is everybody said, that's amazing. Did your parents stay together? I said, yeah, and they said, your parents must be amazing. They had to be so hard on them. And it must have been just 10 years ago, somebody said, well, what about you? And I remember what it was like for me. And the big thing, Mark, was I had so much shame because I didn't want anybody to see my brother like that. The other shame was this big secret that I didn't tell anybody is I wished he would die because I didn't want to see him like that. Because he couldn't talk, he just lay there and stare off into the distance. And that kind of stayed with me. And that just uncovered that a few years ago. What was really hard is I started high school young at 13. So that happened. My brother died in spring. And I really didn't. I wanted him to go, but I didn't want him to leave. I didn't want to be alone. Then I went into my high school, which was about, 11 miles away is what it was. I can't remember what it was. And I remember it was so uncomfortable for me to be with all these kids. I knew some of them by name. I didn't really know them because it took several communities or a big area to put a high school together. My best friend went to another school. And now I realize how confusing that was. The reason I tell you that is I'll never forget the first time I went to a party and I had alcohol. everything got to be so easy. I went from a zero to a hero. I mean, I was smooth. At least I thought I was, right? It's the worst thing about an alcoholic will say the same thing over and over again if he thinks it's funny. But that's why I say it was the answer to all my problems. And then cocaine is like, what that does is amazing, because then all of a sudden I was superhero. I became better looking, wiser, wealthier. I could go from having $2 to thinking I was a millionaire in a second. So, but that's was kind of the start of my journey into that. And the deeper it got, the deeper I went. So.
And you've been working in recovery now.
Yeah, I first started. I worked in a mental hospital. It was lockup. And I can't tell you, so I lied. I had 6 months of recovery. I went in there. I used to be a lot bigger. So part of the story I want to tell you was that when I won the state champion wrestling, I think I said that.
Yeah.
I thought it would change everything. It didn't. So then I thought I wanted to play football in college. And so I really got into the steroids and I started getting into lifting. And, you know, one time I've weighed about 240 and I've benched. When I first came to Gold's Gym, you know John Richling?
Yeah.
John's a good friend of mine from Nebraska. When we would do squats, it stopped the gym. There was nobody squatting that kind of weight. Everybody in Nebraska squatted 600. Everyone. But I'd done all this to add that to myself, and I never felt any better. The reason I told you that is a man asked me to come and speak at this adolescent treatment center. They really liked talking to you because I was big and it was into lifting. So I went in there, talked to him, and I really enjoyed talking to these young people. And at the end, the counselor goes, would you like a job? And I said, well, I'm really not working, but you know, he goes, how much time do you have in sobriety? And I said, well, I got 6 months. And he goes, well, you're supposed to have a year, but just lie to him and tell him you have a year. The reason I tell you that, Mark, I can't tell you how many times that while I was in there, my beginning in recovery was a little sketchy. It was tough. You know, I didn't have anything. But many times I left there going, I don't know if I should be working here or if I should be in here being a patient, you know, because I was struggling so much. But that's where I originally started. I worked at the very first residential treatment center out in Malibu. It was called Seabridge. I think Seabridge or Bridges, and it was adolescent out there. It was on Morningview Drive. This was before all the other treatment centers. And I worked there. And then there was a mentor of mine that was the first couple therapist at Clare Foundation over here on Pico. Great guy. Really, really great guy. His name was Jim Dunnigan. And he had someone, and I had a background in fitness, and he had somebody he'd worked with that was struggling with weight loss. And he said, would you work with him? And so I went and became a private trainer for a while. This man was pretty wealthy and he put me on retainer. So I just worked with him all the time, you know, 5-6 days a week. So I kind of drifted away from that, but equine therapy had been something I'd always loved. And I got back into that, co-facilitated a lot of groups, some of those on sex addiction. My partner at the time, I think she had the longest standing men's sex addiction group in the country at that time. So I've done that and worked with eating disorders. And
what is the core of all these things, all these different vices that we have?
Well, bring it back right then is fear. Yeah. You know, I think a lot of it is
the childhood stuff. Huh? The things we go through as children is really tough.
Children, society. You know, society. You know what Emerson said? I'm paraphrasing a little bit. Emerson, many years ago, said man is advancing very quickly on one side and descending twice as fast on the other. And it's such a challenge to live out there. When I go back to Nebraska, me and my fiance, we just can't believe how much it slows down. Not that they have it together there, but just the competition driving around West LA, you know, that's like combat. And I think there's just so much. What I learned here in this, and the biggest part of recovery is people don't have the power to make me angry, agitated, and fearful. people have the power to expose the anger, agitation, and fear that I keep hidden. So what happens is it's there, an event comes along and takes the cover off, and that's what comes out. It's kind of like an infection. When you push on an infection, the infection comes out. It's the same sum of that behavior, and we're taught so much to keep it together, to keep this persona, to keep this image up. And I noticed even myself recently something happened, and it kind of damaged the image that I thought I had of myself. And I went, wow, I'm just protecting my image. Does that make sense to you?
That's what we're all doing, I think.
We're all doing that. And you're talking about deep core. That's what I think. And the trauma, I think just the trauma living in this world, it's difficult. It's changed a lot. As you know, like you've got a couple young girls. I mean, it's different making a living now.
Yeah. The future is uncertain.
Yeah.
Unlike for you and me, like we knew what the future had in front of us and what was required for us to get to where we wanted to go. Yeah.
And the difficult part of that, what I found, Mark, is, and you notice it lately, it's always them that are the problem. It's always
somebody else.
That person caused me to get angry. That person caused me to get agitated. That group is wrong. Nobody really, like, I don't think COVID caused anxiety. I think it exposed it. I don't think COVID caused problems. It exposed the problems that have been there the whole entire time. I read a book not long ago where a man said everything's going really fast and it's getting complicated and we're losing morals and everything else. That was written in 1940. We're traveling at the speed of sound now. So for me, a lot of this is learned in my recovery is I've always tried to be strong. Recovery for me is learning how to connect to what is strong. So we're all looking for a connection. We try to find it through a human, and it just ain't going to work that way. I have to learn how to connect to this thing that I call God, because it's an easy word, higher power, reality. Because when I'm connected to reality right now, this moment, I'm connected to this thing that I call God. But what's interesting is we have this, what I like to call alcoholism, addictions, a disease. I like to call it a dis-ease. I have a dis-ease of the mind. And as I said, it's either in the future or in the past. And what I've learned to do, and I tell people with the horses, they are the greatest meditators in the world because they're doing it all day long. The only thing that they don't do is they can't be aware of what their inner state is. They're aware of everything around them. They're out there. When they're out there in that pasture, they're not thinking about anything. But a wild horse, a Mustang, they are so alert. They are so aware until we domesticate them and dummy their senses down, kind of like a dog. They are so alert to everything. And I kind of found that to me. I have been kind of domesticated in a way where my senses have been dummied down. And what I mean that about my awareness. And what I was going to say is, and everywhere you go with ADHD or trauma, everyone knows that meditation and mindfulness are the key. And something really great with that is in the Bible, the word remember is in the Bible twice as many times as the word faith. The origin of the word remember is mindful. To be mindful of what you're doing, to be present, to be fully aware of this moment and be in it. And that's been my answer. There was a Jim Dunnigan. I was struggling for a couple of years because, as I said, I had an eating disorder. I learned that when I was trying to make weight in high school. And then when I got sober, it got to be a big thing. And then there was the sex and love addiction. But there was Jim Dunnigan. He gave me such a key. I called him one morning and I said, Jim, I think I had a couple of years. And I said, I'm doing everything. I'm going to these meetings. I'm being of service. I'm doing all this stuff. And he said, and I was in tears. And I go, hey, what am I going to do? And he goes, well, one day at a time won't work for you. And I was going, okay, I thought that was what you were supposed to do. And he goes, no, it's just too big. So he had me write down on a piece of paper, I am now, draw a line, exclamation mark. And I was like, what am I going to do with that? He goes, what are you doing next? And I said, well, I'm going to get in the shower and I'm going to go to one of those meetings. So he said, well, here's what you're going to do. I'm now walking to the bathroom door. I'm now opening the door, now turning on the faucet. I had hair then. I'm now washing my hair. You know what, Mark? It worked. And I'll never forget, it just went poof. So even today, when I have a problem or something in recovery, we like to talk about learning to pause whenever we get agitated or fearful or doubtful. Where I'm going in my recovery and the people I'm working with is teaching them how to live in the pause. That way I don't get agitated, fearful, and doubtful. But to do that, I have to slow down. And that's one of the bigger things I see out there is, you know, it's going pretty fast. Recovery is about slowing down. Slowbriety is what I heard from a gentleman a long time ago. So that's really been the big thing, and I've been really grateful. The horses have been really helpful for me with that. And Will Rogers State Park was always awesome for that, which you know, mm-hmm. what a great place, you know, nature.
Yeah, it's a great way for my kids to grow up.
Yeah, right? I'm so grateful to have come from that little place in Nebraska. I really love it back there. It's funny, when I go back there, in many spiritual books, they talk about coming home. I think Job even said that in the Bible. I actually have a minister background, but I'm not probably the most well-versed person in the Bible that, but there's something in there. And before I go on, is what I got from the Bible was learning. It taught me how to practice. It was talking about learning how to practice the presence of God. So a lot of times I don't use the word God. I just use the word reality, because I'm never there. That's the key. And what I mean by that, if I'm thinking about something and it's not happening right now and it's not practical, that means I'm in imagination. If you're thinking about something that's not happening right now, that's imagination. Somebody gave me a great thing to do. They said, because I thought I was a great meditator, and they said, well, why don't you do this when you walk to the door, when you open up your door for the next week, every time you come in and out of your door, just be aware of yourself doing that. I couldn't do it. Every time I got to my car, I went, oh, I forgot again. And that's when I realized, oh my gosh, I'm never really in my body. I know a lot of people say, I got to stop and get grounded or get connected. You may have heard that. My question is, what were you connected to before that? So you asked me a question I went off on.
No, but I'm totally on board with what you were just saying, how trying to be in the moment is the key to so many great things in life.
It's everything. It's everything. Oh, the answer to my problem. My answer to my problems is I don't do anything with it. I don't. You know what the origin of the word ego is? Mm. I. That's where it originated from. So what I've learned is I do my best. I don't have this down by any means, but I've gotten some freedom from it, and I can't turn around. I want to keep going. You know, I found some freedom and peace of mind that I've never found any other time in my whole life. It's taken a while to get here, but I'm so grateful for it because I feel like I have the keys to the kingdom for this.
What kind of people have you helped or are you helping?
You know, I was going to tell you what's interesting. I've worked with people from the Forbes list. I've worked with people, celebrities, people with Oscars. But I used to counsel the homeless kids down here in Venice. I also worked with some of the gang guys from East L.A., and they were tatted there. And I was doing the equine therapy up there. And the thing that really struck me up there one day, because, you know, honestly, one of the biggest thing in my life, Mark, and thank God it didn't happen, is all I've wanted is wealth and recognition. But I wanted it for the wrong reasons. I wanted it to fill me up, and it's never going to do it. It won't be enough. If I want freedom and peace of mind, if I'm trying to get that in everything I'm doing, right, to have the wealth and recognition, to have the freedom and peace of mind, that means I'm relying on an external thing to tell me I'm okay. That's a lot of work. So what I found is try to find this balance, this connection. Integrity means to be whole and undivided. To find that, then no matter what happens, I'm okay, and I've always wanted that. But to back up to tell you about the horses, so I was at Will Rogers, and I used to take the, it was probably a good thing I didn't get in trouble. So I used to take the homeless kids, because there was something called the Venice Teens Project, and I used to take them and put them in my truck and take them up to Will Rogers. And you know what was so cool? When they got up to Will Rogers, they were just kids. When they were down here in Venice, they were on point, different kids. I mean, some of them had some psychotic stuff going on, but what was fascinating with those kids, the other kids could keep them in line. They would kind of, there was a trust there. But when I got them up there, what I started to recognize was that horse didn't know the difference between the man with 5 million and the man with 5 cents. What that horse did know is that horse knew who could connect to it and who couldn't, who was separate from it and who wasn't. And that's when I realized, oh, wow, the universe is the very same way. The universe doesn't know the difference between the president and the janitor. That's just all me, man, ego. And it just changed everything for me up there, you know. Yeah, I'm very grateful for that. It was a life-changing thing for me.
In the work you do now, how do people connect with you? How do they find you?
Most of all, word of mouth. I've been working with a man named Jim Haggerty. We've done some interventions. We are on a website out there. A lot of it word of mouth. And the equine therapy, since Will Rogers is gone, I'm not really doing as much.
Will Rogers Park is gone, or is it just closed down because of the fires?
It was closed down for the fires. They're trying to get it fixed back up again. I know a lot of people are wanting to get back in there. Especially me, you know how much time I spent there.
Yeah, you live there, basically.
I live there.
The Palisades got turned upside down.
Yeah, I knew that whole. I was there till the very, very bitter end. Me and the park ranger were the last two people to leave. Yeah, very special experience. But like I said, most of my work has been word of mouth. I worked with a wide variety of people, which has really been a lot of fun. But as I said, the main thing that I've noticed is really, has been able to uncover the trauma, what's going on, and then having them, showing them a way to get grounded, really you want to call it meditation, mindfulness. That's really the majority of my practice is around that.
That's wonderful. That's great work you're doing.
Yeah, I enjoy it. I really, really love it.
That's wonderful. Cool. Well, Brad, thank you so much for sharing your story.
Good to see you, brother.
Continue the great work.
Yeah. Thanks, man.
I'll leave a link in the description where they can reach you.
Okay.
Awesome.
Yep.
Good. Okay. Enough. Thank you, Brett.
Thank you.